This is exactly right.
This episode is brought to you by Peacock and the new original docuseries, Making Manson. In 1969, Charles Manson and his followers committed 7 brutal murders in Los Angeles that would make him infamous. Now, with access to over 100 hours of phone recordings between an incarcerated Manson and his closest confidant, a new story will unfold with shocking revelations from the man himself. Making Manson is streaming now only on Peacock.
Hey, it's Karen Kilgariff.
Hey, and I'm Chris Fairbanks.
And we have one burning question for you.
Do you need a ride?
Each week on our podcast, Do You Need a Ride? We drive around with some of the most hilarious people in comedy.
Listen and laugh with us as we run errands, grab some drive-thru, and of course, sit in traffic. It's LA, so there's so much fun traffic.
So check out Do You Need a Ride wherever you get your podcasts.
New episodes every Monday.
We did it first.
Hello.
And welcome
to Rewind with Karen and Georgia.
This is our newest Wednesday episode where we go back and listen to the beginning of this show. Mm. And we chat about everything that we said then and how it's different now and what we're doing and why, all of it.
It makes us sweaty, but we're doing it for you guys.
It's not pleasant.
I kind of love it. I don't hate it. I love it. It's hard. It's important. I'm glad we're doing it.
It's, you know what it is? It's like if somebody recorded you, if you chose to record yourself on a phone call, a long phone call where you said a lot of stuff that you really felt and meant, and then someone released that on the internet and people were like, actually, you're wrong to think this or feel this. That's an approximation of what it's like to look back.
The older I get, the more I realize that young people's thoughts and emotions and feelings are so much stronger and more like adamant than they are when you're older. And usually they're wrong too. So that's what we're doing today.
And we're not that young.
No. I mean, we were. I was 36. Yeah, I think I just turned 36 in this fucking episode. Oh my God. Today, we're revisiting episode 20 from Thursday, June 9th, the day after my birthday, 2016. Hey. We called it 2020.
2020. That's
classic.
Easy.
Classic.
That was an easy one. So now it's time to get in the spirit of giving. Grab a friend. Listen along. It's time to all become day one listeners.
All right, let's listen to the intro of episode 20.
Test, 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 test.
Podcast, positive. Podcast, podcast.
Third time's fast.
Podcast, podcast, podcast.
There you go. Hi, this is My Favorite Murder.
That scared the shit out of me.
What did? Me talking?
Hi, this is.
This is My Favorite Murder.
Starring Georgia Lee Stark.
Karen Kilgariff. A.K.A. Kill Hard.
Kill Hard. One of the lamest things we've done so far. Give ourselves a nickname.
Did you see someone in the Facebook group made a photo of the Die Hard poster and put your face on one guy and my face on another guy?
I did see that. It's turning into like a ego navel gazing kind of like, did you see the picture where the thing we talked about ourselves got made into a thing about ourselves?
I know, but people like it.
They like to play along with us.
We wouldn't talk about it if they weren't doing it.
It's fun times. and there's just thousands of them. It's the best.
We're fueled by their, is it projected narcissism onto us?
No, that's our narcissism.
Okay. Let's talk about how last week we talked about judges.
And their built-in misogyny and sexism.
Right.
That I think at one point I actually said, it's not happening as much these days.
Right. And I think we conjured, speaking of narcissism, I think we conjured.
I think we're the center of the universe.
I think we're the center of the universe about this new fucking huge controversial thing about this dick lick Brock Turner. Who, like, he got convicted of 3 counts of aggravated sexual assault. I'm not even gonna say like clearly he was guilty.
He is guilty.
He is guilty.
He was unanimously voted guilty by a jury of his peers.
Right. And yet
the old judge said, hey, let's not fuck up his great swimming career.
Right.
And said 6 months in county.
And then his dad had the nerve to say, like, well, it was 20 minutes of his life. Is he going to get...
You know what his dad said? Mm-hmm. So, well, the brilliant thing, and everyone's seen this, like, we're basically recapping what's been happening on social media, but the victim of this stood up in court and read this letter to him that is one of not just moving and amazing as a first person account, the clarity in it.
Yeah.
And the, I'll let you know what's actually happening. And not, we're not just going to hear from these lawyers. I'll fucking tell you
right.
myself.
And it's not just like how much you hurt me. It's like, here are the repercussions of your actions and decisions.
Whether or not you admit to them, we all know you did because there's the proof. You can pretend you didn't do it like a fucking psycho all you want.
Yeah.
It's
well, he's
foregone conclusion.
Pretending he didn't do it. He's saying that it wasn't what people thought it was.
Right.
And he probably believes that.
Well, he needs to believe it because when the wall finally comes down that he's like, I'm a rapist.
Yeah.
Well, then what happens then?
Yeah.
And I'm sure everything in his life has been built around you get whatever you want, little baby Brock.
Yeah. And then some of his friends, there's a band called, what's it called? Good English?
Let's not even talk about
it. Well, the thing is, like, I just don't see a time in my life where I would defend a friend of mine. And I'm thinking of multiple friends who are good people would say, no, it wasn't rape.
Right.
I wouldn't ever say that. I would
especially
say,
as a woman.
Yeah.
And that girl is, the girl in the band is a woman.
I would say, I'm really surprised. We would have never thought that this guy was capable of that. But I would never say that it's not true and it's and she's full of shit.
Especially after a jury unanimously voted him guilty of rape.
You can see the evidence. So we were just going to look it up to talk about it. And I found this article in The Cut that the judge, this piece of shit judge, Aaron Persky, who's like thankfully getting a lot of shit and will probably be disbarred. There's an article published. Tracy Kaplan writes that this isn't the first controversial sexual assault case the judge has presided over. So here's the fucking story. In 2007, a 17-year-old girl alleged that she was gang raped by at least 9 members of the De Anza college basketball team at a house party while she was severely intoxicated. 3 soccer players discovered the rape in progress, broke it up. Thank fucking God for some people. And they said they discovered her unconscious and covered in vomit and called it clearly non-consensual. District Attorney Dolores Carr ultimately decided not to move forward with the case, which was met with criticism. In 2011, the case was brought to civil trial and the victim sued for $7.5 million in damages. The judge, Persky, presided. He ruled before lunch that Noef can show the jury 7 photos of the women whom the court is calling Jane Doe, partying about a year or so after the alleged gang rape. This shows she was partying afterwards and they could show photos. And the photo, she is scantily clad. She's scantily clad.
I'm sorry. So what?
Yeah.
So what?
They said that the photos are a direct contradiction, quote, of the plaintiff claims that she is socially isolated and socially reticent.
But, all right.
But that doesn't, and especially... Not especially, but photos post rape.
Right.
She's fucking, it doesn't matter what she does.
She could be spiraling out of control. Yeah. She could be doing anything. Who the fuck
or
knows?
Or she could be a slut. It doesn't fucking matter.
It doesn't matter. And here's the other thing. Because we were talking about this at work today. The bottom line is this. You know in your gut, you know what feels right and you know what feels wrong. And if you are so narcissistic and selfish that you're going to take what you want no matter, either you don't have any feeling toward how you affect other people or you don't care, then you, but ultimately that's your truth that you have to live in and sit in.
Yeah.
And if you say have to be on drugs or drunk so that you have to ignore those, whatever. But at the end of the day, you cannot parse out and argue things like this when what we're talking about is basic human decency.
And I know that for a lot of people, I think there's a lot of gray area with rape that people have a hard time dealing with. But so even if this chick had ever fucked any of these 9 guys, it's still rape if she's intoxicated and can't give consent. Like it's such a, it's to that extreme that even if she fucked these guys,
Well, yeah, because if she had fucked them, that would have been her choice.
Right.
That's what the, in that letter, one of my favorite parts of the, of Brock Turner's mm-hmm. victim, she said, how can I be promiscuous if I did not choose to do it?
Right.
If I wasn't even awake, how is that promiscuous?
Yeah.
That's, I'm unconscious.
Yeah.
And that's the part that people want to argue. They want to deflect away from the truth of the actual action, which is you took a person who was not there and fucked their body.
Right.
That's disgusting.
Right.
You have a problem. That girl doesn't have a problem, no. except for the fact that you decided to do that to her.
And it's just so, I think about people I've dated and been with, and none of them would want to fuck an unconscious body.
No, that means there's predatory. Something wrong with you.
That's predatory.
It's sociopathic.
And I don't bizarre. Care how drunk you... I get drunk and I do stupid things, but they're not out of character. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, no, a lot of people do. There's a whole aspect to this that I think they can't talk about, which is the way she tells that story. She is blackout. She goes from dancing and feeling kind of drunk mm-hmm. to waking up behind a dumpster. I think there's a roofie element that they can't talk about.
Right.
That's a theory that I have.
That maybe the defendant kind of got that thrown out or something.
Well, that they couldn't prove it, or it had already gone through her body, so that they can't include it. That would be prejudicial.
Right.
So they can't. And she's probably not even going to go there, because it's like, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Because
yeah.
even if I drink 11 beers in a row, that doesn't mean I want you to rape me.
Totally.
Don't be a fucking lunatic. And it's not, and also, if the woman is saying that that is her truth, it's not up to you.
Yeah.
It's not your final choice.
Totally.
Random guy.
Totally.
Or rapist guy.
Or to defend that's not her truth anymore. You don't do that.
Just fuck off. Not you, Georgia, not you. It makes me so mad.
I know.
Because it's just so... It's when people try to parse out things like this of like, is she's half responsible if she was drunk?
Right.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
These are, I mean, there was a girl that did an amazing tweet today that said, these people who are trying to blame this victim's rape on her drunkenness are the same ones that threw temper tantrums when U2's album was downloaded without their consent on their computer. It's the same. It's that thing of like, how dare you?
Yeah.
If this happened to you, you would never be saying it.
I saw
a
meme that said, well, she was drunk. What did you expect? What did she expect? And the answer was a fucking hangover.
Yeah.
You didn't expect to get raped. You expected a hangover.
Yeah. The idea that should be part of the equation and too bad for you
yeah.
is insanity. That's why we talk about it.
And the people
culture.
Who...
Like, that fucking judge was a lacrosse player. He was a lacrosse player at Stanford.
What are you going to do with swimming? How on earth do you think... why? What about this girl?
Well, that's boys club bullshit. That's what that
swimming.
Is.
Swimming. It's going to ruin...
It's like saying someone's life is more important than another.
Totally.
I mean, this goes back to everything we talk about, so it's just it's another frustration, but here's what I will say. I really do love, if you get down into the, if you read a comment section, you're always going to be disappointed in humanity. But Ashley Bamfield, I think her name is, the CNN anchor, she had a whole show. Did you
right.
see that?
No, but
she read the letter
on
her show. It took 40 minutes and people were tweeting about it the whole time. And it was all these people that were like journalists. It's all these, you know, those blue dot people on Twitter
mm-hmm.
that were like, this is incredible. This is unbelievable television journalism. There were people that worked on the show that were saying, it is uncomfortably silent in this studio right now. Everyone was just like, because that letter, that's the other thing I was going to say. Not only is it an amazing, clear, well-spoken, like, mm-hmm. here's actually my side, if you want to hear it. It's brilliantly written.
It's incredibly written, and I love the fact that she was like, it's not just something you read, and you need to see the emotional, the person reading it, the face, and even if it's not the real one of what happened, you know, hearing the inflections and hearing a woman read that, I think is really important, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So... I think that at the end of the day, when everything kind of like the dust settles, it's going to be an incredibly important piece of action that a woman took for herself.
I agree.
That's precedent setting. It's amazing.
Well, we were also talking last week about victim statement and victim impact statements, including the family, you know, finally being able to read, their impact statement to the murderer of their child and forgiving them and how insane that must feel. Did you see that someone's dad jumped across
the table and and during his victim statement to the serial killer and fucking attacked him and had to be like restrained and
at Grim Sleeper?
No. Some other one. Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me.
I mean, good for him. I hope the cops like waited a beat before they grabbed him. Is that terrible? That's...
I mean, how do you control, you know?
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of the above.
Heavy.
This
duty. Heavy duty. But still, I don't know. I like it.
You guys, be witnesses.
You know, and also, you know what? Watch your fucking drink. If you're going to drink, you have to have one friend who's a little bit smarter and more down to earth than you,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm speaking as a 20-year-old Karen Kilgariff who was never paid attention to anything. But also, keep your hand over your drink. Drink out of bottles. Don't make it easy for people. I mean, like, it's never your fault. But at the same time, please be careful. It's a lot.
It's a fucking ton.
This is a lot.
This is a heavy one.
This is, and also we're telling people what to do who are probably all our age. They're like at home looking at their baby, like, you guys, move it along. We got this part covered.
Move it along to the murder part. That's what they're hoping for.
Yeah. We hear you.
We get it.
We're back. I do think it's interesting I wish I could go back and tell Karen and Georgia in 2016 that Chanel Miller really wins this fight, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Writes a beautiful book, gets to speak for herself, really galvanizes a lot of young women who know how she feels and have been through what she's been through or similar or can relate in mm-hmm. some way. Just, I think that separate from the rest of the nastiness is like, that's a person who really took that situation and like made it her own.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it really motivated people to think in a different way and maybe awaken people's understanding of, you know, what happens in these cases and, you know, opened some people up to an empathy they didn't have or an understanding they didn't have before.
Right. Like just knowing that a judge would be that concerned for the perpetrator of this horrible rape.
Right.
It just like, and that judge had a history of doing that was, and these kinds of things where it's like, you have to talk about it and you have to make noise about it so that it can change.
Yeah.
And now, of course, in 2024, it's like, it seems preposterous and horrifying. And, you know, people are so good at being kind of like telling these stories and trying to make change.
I think that changed the course of a lot of people's lives and a lot of the way people think.
Yeah.
And understand sexual assault and rape. And that is just an incredible feat.
Yeah.
That. All right. Well, let's get into Karen's story where she tells us just a classic horrible one. The one and only Night Stalker. Are you first or am I first?
I think I'm first this week.
All right. So, Karen?
Well, today, hi, Georgia. Hi. It's the part for the murder, skippers. today is June 6th.
7th.
Today is June 7th,
I said. My birthday's tomorrow.
Oh, girl. It's Georgia's birthday tomorrow, everybody.
You know,
tell her happy birthday on Facebook.
Thank you. You know, I started cross-stitching you as a belated birthday present because it was your birthday while we were recording and I didn't even know.
It was my secret.
You're such a dick. I started cross-stitching you at Stay Sexy, Don't Get Murdered. But I realized halfway through, I got Stay Sexy and I realized I'm a terrible cross-stitcher.
Now I want it even more.
It looks like shit, and I showed it to Vince, and I'm like, "Does this look terrible?" Because you know you can be really self-critical, and he's like, "I just think you need a little more practice." Like he very sweetly said, "That looks terrible."
I want it so bad.
I'll show it to you. It looks insane.
Put it on a pillow.
Okay. I stitched it while I watched a murder show.
Oh, now I have to have it. It's like a child's Christmas art project.
It's literally like a child's art project.
Love it. So, because it's June 7th, it's a special holiday. 3 years ago on this day, the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez, died in prison.
Oh, shit. Was it only 3 years ago?
2013.
God, it seems like, yeah.
June 7th, 2013.
okay. which was 3 years ago, right?
Wow. Yeah.
The math is right. He died, his liver basically shut down. He had a couple bad things going on. He had like blood cancer and something else. But before he died, he turned bright green. They said like a highlighter pen.
Oh my God.
Like he looked crazy.
What is that? Your liver just can't function.
It's your liver. Because he was a crazy drug addict. He was like, he was bad drugs. So yeah, he was basically just shutting down altogether. So I saw that there was an article about that in the news somewhere. So I was like, you know what? That's the one my friend Adrienne, when we very first started this, I told the story about it. And she was like, got to be Night Stalker. So I was like, it's finally time to tell the story of Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker.
Give it to me.
Not to be confused with the original Night Stalker, Eron's the East Area Rapist / the Golden State Killer.
Yeah.
Who could still be out there. This is Richard Ramirez, who basically in the summer early spring of 1985 started a insanity berserker killing and molesting and raping spree that started in Southern California, went up to the San Francisco Bay Area, came on back down, and then ends in it's my favorite ending to one of these stories. It's the best. And I remember seeing it on the news when they caught him. It was the people of Boyle Heights rose up, girl.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So I'll just try to do this, encapsulate. So he was born in 1960 in El Paso, Texas, the youngest of seven children. In the barrio is what I don't. Is that a politically correct way to say it?
I would if yes.
It's a bad part of town in El Paso.
Yeah,
his parents were his father was a railway worker, but he was illegal, so he probably didn't make great money.
Mm-hmm.
He also early on got hit in the head with a swing.
Man.
And got knocked out for a while. I think they said like an hour.
If your kid gets hit in the head, send him back.
And then there was a thing I was looking at, and it was like Ted Bundy, the Green River Killer, Richard Ramirez, John Wayne Gacy, Fred West, who's that British lunatic who raped all those girls, killed his own children. They all had head injuries as children.
Dude.
So, you know, keep your eye out. You know who else did?
Who?
Karen Kilgariff.
Shut up.
Uh-huh.
What happened?
My mom tripped over my high chair when I was like 6 months old. I had stitches in the front of my head.
Smash.
And then later on, I don't think this is, this was my own private pain, but during swimming lessons, I tried to do a front forward somersault jump off the side of the pool and just smacked my head.
Holy
super
shit.
Super hard. And I just, nobody saw it. And so I just held the side of the pool and kind of like quietly cried to myself until I felt better and then kept on swimming.
Oh,
because swimming above all, right? When you're a kid.
Totally. You probably had a concussion.
I probably did.
Holy shit.
I probably did.
Remember how we couldn't remember our concussions one episode? There's one of them.
There it is. Okay, so here's the bad part. Ricky, being the youngest, was kind of like, he was basically a juvenile delinquent, just robbed a bunch of shit, did stuff, got sent to juvie. And his older older cousin Mike came back from Vietnam, and he had been a Green Beret in Vietnam. And it's as bad as you think. Ricky hung around with Mike, and Mike was like, here's all the shit I did to women in Vietnam.
Oh,
here's what we did to the enemy. Here's this, here's that. Just filling his head with all this terrible shit. Showed him pictures, mutilations, and torture. Horrible, like, Polaroid pictures. And Mike was married, and the two of them would hang out. Ricky and Mike would hang out and smoke pot, talk about Satan worship. And Mike's wife finally was like, I don't want you hanging out with him anymore, and you guys just sit around or whatever. Well, Mike went ahead and shot and killed his wife front of Richard Ramirez.
How old was Richard at this point?
He was a teenager. I believe he was 15.
Holy shit.
I don't have the exact age written down. He was a teenager. They say that the trauma from that is basically fueled much of the rest of his life.
And I'm sure by that time he was so desensitized to murder and torture, and that even like without that happening, I feel like he would have been fucked.
He was definitely already kind of a sad case.
Yeah.
And then that was like, imagine that level of trauma. That's just insane. Seeing someone shot. They said that he had blood on him. Close he was. So bad news. He was also inspired by the Hillside Stranglers.
It's weird to feel sympathy for him. You know what I mean? Like,
because if you don't hit your head and you don't have a fucked up cousin named Mike, could Richard Ramirez have just been a guy that then went on to live in El Paso and work at a mattress store?
Totally.
Like, I don't know. Stuff like that is like, after what, if you become... I mean, obviously, we've talked about this a ton. It's a mental disorder. You can't just kill people. It's a psychopathy or whatever. But it's sad to think that he had to start his life like that.
Yeah.
It's awful. Right now, Last Podcast on the Left is doing a Hillside Stranglers series, and it's awesome.
I love it.
And the lead detective on the Hillside Stranglers... So Richard Ramirez loved hearing about the Hillside Stranglers. He ended up moving to LA after that happened and like kind of bumming around there. So when the Hillside Stranglers cases, he had heard about them. I don't know if he was living in LA while it was happening or whatever, but he was very inspired and he really liked that story. He got really fascinated by it. And it turned out that a detective named Frank Salerno was the lead detective on the Hillside Stranglers case. Mm-hmm. And then he also was the lead detective on the Night Stalker case. And Frank Salerno said that the experience he had going through the Hillside Strangler and all the mistakes that he made and they all made and that he learned from is the reason that they were able to catch the Night Stalker as quickly as they did. It didn't go on for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Because he'd learned so much from being on that other huge high-profile case.
Yeah.
So anyway, it basically starts February 25th, 1985. A 6-year-old Montebello girl is taken from a bus bench near school while waiting for her older sister. She was carried away in a zippered garment bag.
What?
Sexually assaulted and dropped off in Silver Lake.
What?
So this is one of his earliest crimes.
Holy shit.
Then a month later, March 11th, a 9-year-old Monterey Park boy is kidnapped from his home at night, sexually assaulted, left in Elysian Park near Silver Lake.
Well, we're like 5 minutes from those places.
That's right. And this is the nightmare sauce of someone comes into your house and takes a child.
Totally.
It's beyond fucked up.
Can we comment on how weird it is that he doesn't discriminate sex
right
people?
And I mean, that's one of the things is they had a very hard time establishing an MO with him because it was all ages, all sexes, all races. Like there was no pattern.
There was no connection. So maybe they didn't put it all together as one person.
Right. Exactly. Okay. March 17th, Dale Okazaki, 34, is killed, and her roommate, Maria Hernandez, is wounded in an attack in their Rosemead condominium. And 2 miles from that apartment, Sailian Yu, 30, of Monterey Park, is pulled from her car near her home and shot. She dies the next day.
Jesus. I mean, you think that, like, in your car, you're good.
Yeah, no. Well, lock your goddamn door.
Lock your fucking door.
To quit showing off. sorry, it's victim blaming. March 20th, an Eagle Rock girl is kidnapped and sexually molested by a man who breaks into her family's home at night again. So this is, he's getting that taste for, you know, he puts on all black and he goes fucking sneaking around. And what they say is a lot of these, I mean, this was 1985, mm-hmm. such an innocent time. People left their doors ajar at night. It was bad news. So
holy
he was
shit.
Basically going around trying doors.
Jesus.
March 27th, Vincent Zazara, 64, is a retired investment counselor, and he's beaten to death. And his wife, Maxine, who is 44, is stabbed to death by an attacker who enters their ranch-style Whittier home through an open door. Oh, shit. God damn it. I always try to scroll on my computer by touching the thing, and it zips me back up to the top. Okay, we'll edit that part out, and we're back in. Open door. Their bodies are found by a business acquaintance. Oh, I actually, I got two different stories on this. I got a business acquaintance. This is an LA Times article. Mm-hmm. But actually, there's another article that I read that their son found them.
No. I wonder what their relationship was like. He was 20 years older than her?
He was 20 years older. I bet he had money. They lived in Whittier. Whittier is like real pristine.
Tony.
It's a bunch of white Christians kind of living out in the valley. That's where Nixon went to college.
They were a fun couple.
I bet they were fun. I bet they were fun times.
Yeah.
But here's the gross part that we'll have to uncomfortably transition into. He mutilated her body. She had a T-shape carved into her breast. And, ready?
No.
This one's bad.
No.
He gouged out her eyes and took them with him.
No!
Uh-huh.
Boobies and eyes.
I mean, problems. What we're saying is problems.
Leave the boobies and the eyes alone.
Please.
Please.
No matter what the devil tells you to do.
He's joking. He was, like, being facetious, and you took it seriously. You fucking idiot.
The devil's joking, you mean? Is that what you're saying?
Uh-huh.
Remember that the devil has a very wry sense of humor, and so sometimes he's just being sarcastic.
He's basically George Burns. Just, okay, sorry, go on.
The autopsy revealed that those mutilations were post-mortem.
Oh, good.
That's the good news.
Thank God.
I should have. I buried the lead on that one.
I figured because I just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, it's too much. This was a house where he left footprints in the flower beds, and the police photographed them and made a cast. And that was the only evidence that they had at the time. And they found bullets at the scene matched those to previous attacks. And that's when the police started putting together they have a serial killer, that there's someone that's, you know, going around doing some
shit.
Yeah, this one says that Vincent and Maxine's bodies were discovered in their Whittier home by their son, Peter. Dude. I hate that because, like, the thing that I was reading seemed very reliable, and then I was starting to get, the more you read, because there's so much about the Night Stalker, there was conflicting reports.
Can you, oh, God, I just picture the eyeballless mom.
I mean,
like, it's bad enough, but then...
That's nightmare. Like,
yeah.
That's special horror movie. That's like the third scare in the horror movie where it's, like, the worst one.
Totally.
Not having eyes is bad
news. Totally.
Okay. Mabel Bell on May 29th. So then, let's see, that was... So later that month, this was, like, 2 weeks later, Mabel Bell, age 84.
Oh, honey.
And her invalid sister, Florence Lang, age 81.
Ladies.
Are beaten in their Monrovia home. And they live in a house down a long, narrow, winding road. And they're found 4 days later by a gardener.
Oh.
And they weren't dead. But Mabel died.
They weren't dead 4 days later?
Mm-mm. Oh, maybe Florence was dead, but Mabel was still alive.
No.
But she only lived 2 more months. This is rough because this was why this guy was so, like, frightening. He didn't give a fuck. I mean, he raped old women. He raped children. He was just, you know, he was on one.
Crazy, like, yeah, right off the bat, just to be berserk.
Yeah. June 27th, Patty Elaine Higgins, who was 32, had her throat slashed in her Arcadia home. And also, for people that don't know the Los Angeles area, all these areas are just low-key, suburban, outlying cities.
And they're not close. It's not like... These are all random little cities that are not, like, connected in any way.
Right.
Which is so weird.
Kind of all around the San Gabriel Valley.
Right, which is surprising that they were able to connect them because it sounds like it'd be all different districts.
Well, they kept finding this Avia shoe print in places. That was one of the things it's Avia, you know that brand?
Yeah, no.
A-V-I-A.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
It looks kind of Reebok-y. Like, the symbol is partial Reebok, but extra lines.
Okay. So are people freaking out at this point? Like, does everyone know about it?
Oh, yeah. We heard about it.
You remember it?
I was 15.
Holy shit.
Oh, dude. This was crazy because it was like he was on tour. Like, it was like a nightmare because you heard about it down in L.A. or whatever, and you're like, oh, those poor people.
Yeah.
Then he popped up to the Bay Area.
Fuck.
People were losing their shit. It was crazy.
Oh, my God.
It was like, it was basically kind of like watching a storm come where you're just like, and it truly was that thing of like, we could be next.
Yeah.
It was nuts. Okay, so, it was only like 4 days later, 2 miles away from the Higgins home, mm-hmm. Mary Louise Cannon, who was 77, mm-hmm. Who had already fought off 2 bouts of cancer, was murdered. Her throat was slashed. That was in Arcadia. July 7th, Joyce Nelson, who was 61, was beaten to death in Monterey Park. And July 11th, they have Monterey Park has a neighborhood watch meeting, and 600 people go to it because people are freaking out. Yeah. They're just like, but the police are like, we're sorry, we don't have a suspect. So they have these tiny pieces of evidence, but no suspect at all. On July 20th, Chana Rong Kavanath, who is 32 years old, is slain in his Sun Valley home, and his wife is beaten and raped, and their 8-year-old son is beaten. And he steals $30,000 in jewels and cash from the house.
Holy shit. What are you doing in Sun Valley?
I know, right? Hiding your shit.
Yeah.
You'd have to. But a witness sees the suspect flee in a maroon-colored Pontiac Grand Prix.
Yay.
That has a damaged right front fender.
Fuck yeah.
So now they have that. So then on July 20th, Max Needing, who was 68, and his wife Leela Ellen, who was 66, were shot to death in Glendale.
That's right, boss!
It's so close to here. August 6th, Christopher Peterson is 38. His wife Virginia is 27. And they're both shot in the head in their Northridge home and survive.
Yay.
Survive.
God, it's just so wild and hopeful that you can survive a fucking head shooting.
I know. It happens in the show I Survived all the time.
Fuck.
And it's people in a very normal voice being like, I heard this loud noise and my head hurt really bad. Yeah. You're just like, how are you telling me this story?
Yeah.
Sorry, it's like I make money off of I Survived. I'm really not. I'm not sponsored, I swear to God.
You should be.
I actually should be. So on August 8th, my sister's birthday, Elias Abawath, 35, is shot to death in his Diamond Bar home, which is fancy, right? Isn't Diamond Bar where they have all the horses?
Okay.
It's
I've never been there. I've lived here my whole life, and I'm just in like Sun Valley.
Oh, you know what it is? No Jews allowed in Diamond Bar. That's what it is.
Not surprised.
Okay, so he's 35. That's so young.
Yeah.
He's shot to death. His wife is beaten. His two children, ages 3 and 3 months, not harmed.
Oh, good.
Thank God. So later in the day, they say that they have linked that this attack on the Abawaths is the final link, that they are all the same suspect from all of these attacks. And this is the first public revelation that there's a serial killer loose in Southern California.
That took that many bodies.
Yeah. And also because it was so random, Sun Valley and Diamond Bar are two very different cities.
Totally.
So August 10th, reports of crimes made by citizens to LAPD communications are up 15%. Everyone's on edge. They're freaking out.
Yeah.
So people are calling in. There's increased sales at gun shops.
Yeah.
Of course, everyone's freaking out.
I would be staying in a hotel forever.
Right?
Indefinitely.
So then the Board of Supervisors offers a $10,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the
night. Gonna need more than that. Bro.
But you know what?
You know what? Up that shit.
Let's get that money up there. So now that they link back to the shooting of Cylon Yu in Monterey Park from March 17th, they're like, it's this one too. The gun, the ballistics evidence that they have links that in. Then on August 17th, a man named Peter Pan, was 66, was shot and killed in his bed in his San Francisco home.
Oh, fuck.
And his wife, Barbara, who's 64, is shot and beaten, but she survives.
What's her name? Wendy. Was that the most insensitive thing I've ever said in my life?
No, we have to do it.
Okay.
And their dog was also the nanny. That's the part I love in Peter Pan, where it's like, so the dog takes care of the children.
Yeah. And then he locks them out and they go missing. Right?
They all do drugs and fly off the roof.
Yeah. Good job, Dad.
So August 22nd, the cops in San Francisco announced that the slaying of Peter Pan and his wife is the Night Stalker. And that's when the NorCal goes apeshit.
Yeah.
I still remember, I can't remember, like, I just remember watching it on the news with my family. We watch so much news every night.
Yeah, news was a nightly occurrence.
Yeah.
You know how we all avoid it now? No, that's not what you did.
You watched it as a family and went through it. But, like, I remember that, like, Dianne Feinstein was on. They were making, like, official announcements. It was all breaking news. It was, like, it was a big
deal. Because
remember
when news was, like, from 6 to 7, and then there was, like, going to be a 10 to 11, and that was it for news? It wasn't like how it is now.
Right. Yeah, that was, we had to watch it then. Like, my parents would turn off, you know, something we wanted to watch, and they'd be like, no, 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 it's time for the news. Like, Entertainment Tonight is what we'd want to watch.
Yes.
And they'd be like, it's time for the news, because you wouldn't get it otherwise.
Like, right after Jeopardy.
Yeah, exactly. So, sorry, I lost my spot. So they say that the evidence that they have that's linking it are the ballistics, also messages that he scrawled on the walls, and a distinctive but undisclosed piece of evidence that the killer left behind in the homes of his victims. But then San Francisco Mayor Dianne Feinstein gets on the news offering a $10,000 reward for any information for the capture of the Night Stalker. Unfortunately, she gives away that distinctive piece of proof they have is his shoe print. And so that night,
shut up.
Richard Ramirez walks onto the Golden Gate Bridge and throws his shoes over.
Yeah.
So no longer is that going to be a piece of evidence that helps anything. Yep.
Holy shit. Everyone who had those shoes did that, though. Just like 49 guys on the Golden Gate Bridge.
So they're like, oh, shit. 49 peeping Toms that are like, why did I ever buy a Vias? All right. So August 25th, a man named Bill Carnes, who was 27, is critically injured by being shot in the head while sleeping in his Mission Viejo home. So now the Night Stalker's back down.
He's in Orange County now.
Yeah. Is that where Mission Viejo is?
Yeah, Mission Viejo is Orange County.
And his 29-year-old fiance, I believe her name was Inez. My saved document and my original document are both on here. And some has some information and some has other. Here we go. Fuck. So Bill Carnes' fiance, Inez, is raped. But as the Night Stalker runs out of the house and gets into the stolen car that he has stolen from San Francisco down to Orange County, she sees him leave in a 1976 orange Toyota station wagon.
Why are you getting an orange car, Night Stalker?
Not smart. Yeah, how about black, brown? Go for your...
Brown, because it's the 80s, probably. Yeah.
And you'd blend in.
Right.
Brown or like a kind of a shimmery blue.
Totally.
Was every single car on the road.
Yeah.
So she sees that as she like crawled up to the window and saw that. And so was able to tell the police that that's the car that
good
the guy
girl.
Had. So now at Los Angeles City Council is offering a $25,000 reward.
Yeah. Yeah, you are.
And then Governor Duke Majin announces the state is going to add 10 grand onto that.
Yeah, that's more like it.
So when they find the stolen Toyota, they pick up, there's a new laser examining device that they use, and they pick up a single fingerprint on the rear view mirror.
Amazing.
He took off his gloves, readjusted that mirror, and they found one fingerprint in the whole car.
Checking to see if he had anything in his teeth, and he fucking...
And he, you know what he had in his teeth?
What?
The most rotten teeth of all time.
Really?
Yeah. His mouth was filled with them. Oh, you've never seen his teeth?
No.
He never had any dental work done his entire life, and all he ever ate was candy and drank Coke. The first time he ever went to the dentist was when he was in jail.
Oh, just trash mouth.
Crazy. The mouth on this guy is nutso.
Ugh.
It's horrifying. And a lot of his suspects, the thing all the women who were attacked, who lived, said was the worst breath I've ever smelled.
What a weird,
Yeah.
Insult to injury.
I mean, just make it as upsetting as it possibly can be. They use that fingerprint and they find in the computer system that was very new. Mm-hmm. It had like just gone online. That there was a guy who had like very, I think misdemeanors, like burglary shit named Richard Ramirez. Mm-hmm. So they got their guy. So they put out an all points bulletin for the arrest of Richard Ramirez. And they have the, have you ever seen the picture that the police sketch artist drew of him?
Yes, it looks just like him, right?
Yes, but it's also one of the scariest things ever.
I'm looking it up right now, go on.
Yeah. So they put out, there's the picture that the cop drew, but then they have a mugshot of him in real life. And that goes on the front page of all the papers in Los Angeles. So meanwhile, Ramirez has no idea that that's happened because he was in Phoenix visiting his brother. And so the cops stake out the bus station because they think he's going to try to leave town now that his picture went up.
He's already gone.
Stake out the bus station. He was already gone. He was coming back. He passed the cops in the bus station.
No.
And just kept it cool and walked out of the bus station downtown, walked into Boyle Heights, went over to a liquor store, walked up. There was a newspaper stand thing right on the outside. He picks up the newspaper and sees the picture of himself on the front of the newspaper. Inside the store, a woman looks and starts yelling, "El matin, el matin," which in Spanish, I'm giving that a French accent because I took French in high school. In Spanish, I guess that means the bully. And he hears that and he starts running. This I love so much.
Okay.
He starts running. So he goes over to, he runs and he tries to carjack a woman. So he runs up, he punches her in the stomach and he tries to pull her out of the car. The husband of this woman hears this going on, grabs a pipe.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Runs out. The guy, Richard Ramirez, is in the car. He hits him over the head.
Fuck yeah.
And so Ramirez runs out of that car and starts running. A man named Jose Bergeron, who was the neighbor, had run over, but he was an older man at the time. Now he's in his 80s. At the time, he was in his 50s. And he ran over to defend her. And Richard Ramirez had said, "Don't get any closer or I'll shoot you." But the guy says, "I didn't see a gun."
Yeah.
So he basically opened the car door and then the husband came out and hit him in the head. Mm-hmm. He starts running. Jose Bergeron, however you say it, calls for his two sons.
Oh yeah.
And says, "Run after him."
Fuck yeah, dude.
So these two boys start running. They ran for 2 miles.
Yes.
They chase him down.
Yes.
As they start running, everyone in the neighborhood sees it and starts running too.
Fuck, can you fucking imagine?
There's 200 people running up the street.
How did I never know this?
It was, I think I remember seeing this. Now, I could have seen a reenactment I'm sure I saw a reenactment, but I feel like I remember seeing the helicopter shot on the news of all the people in the street in Boyle Heights. Because basically, this whole fucking neighborhood was like, "We got the fucking Night Stalker."
Fuck yeah.
These two boys, it was Jamie and I can't remember the other brother's name, Bergwan, Burgoin, along with like 4 or 5 other dudes. They pin him to the ground. They have him on the curb and everyone just starts beating the shit out of him. They had called the cops. I think Jose called the cops when they started running. So the cops got there mid beat down so that Richard Ramirez was going, "It's me, it's me." And the cops saved him from this crowd of people.
Holy shit.
It's my favorite.
That's incredible.
In the world. Isn't that awesome? At one point, he ran through a backyard. They have a picture of a guy who tried to hit him with... He was pruning the tree in his yard. And the guy tried to, like, stab him with these pruning shears, these huge pruning shears, but he missed.
Oh.
And so they had all these... It's the best. You can look it on the line. There's pictures of all these people who are from Boyle Heights who got these awards. They get awards from the city. They get awards from the cops.
Fuck yeah.
It's awesome. And it's totally just people like, "Nope, not in our fucking neighborhood."
Good.
He thought he could go and just blend in.
Yeah.
And just be like, "Oh, whatever."
Yeah.
That's my favorite. So, and when they brought him down to their local precinct, 500 people were outside chanting. Like, they wanted to kill him. They wanted him strung
up. Just, like, send him out.
Yeah. I mean, this is a man who, like, just story after story, it only got scarier. And he became, like, he was, like, this phantom where no one could figure out who he was, where he was, and he was everywhere. you know, he was just driving around changing city.
Jesus, my parents did a really good job of keeping this shit from me because I don't fucking remember any of this.
You don't?
No.
How old were you, though?
What was it, 87?
85.
I was five.
Oh.
And little baby Georgia. And you, Mission Viejo, that's like 15 minutes, 10 minutes from Irvine where I grew up.
Marty, good job.
Good job, Marty.
Well done.
Janet. They were going through their divorce, so I was busy.
Well, that's good. You probably were getting a lot of extra toys.
Yeah, probably.
At the time.
Yeah.
I was just going to see this really quick. Oh, one of the cops said, it seemed like alert citizens were reporting the suspect every step of the way. So basically, as they ran up the street, every house was calling the cops.
Can you imagine what it would have been like if they had, like now, if they had fucking cell phones? I bet you it would be half as many people chasing him and half, and the other half would be filming him.
Filming it, yeah. We'd be able to post this and just be like, here's what happened.
You guys put your phone away and participate.
So at the end of this, so the cops come in and there is a super, if you want to look it up, very scary picture of him in the cop car because his whole head is wrapped. So instead of having like his rock star hair or whatever, he looks like a gray alien. He is so scary looking in the backseat. He had some pretty serious head injuries. They were beating the shit out of him.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. He actually says, I'm lucky the cops caught me. Because these people were going to kill him.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
At the end, the last victim that was confirmed of the Night Stalker was 9-year-old Mi Lung, whose body was found in a San Francisco hotel basement in 1984. She wasn't linked to him until 2009.
Holy shit.
When they found, they got DNA.
Oh,
and,
honey.
Yeah.
Poor baby.
Horrible.
Yeah.
So he had actually done that while he was in the city, but they didn't know.
Yeah. I wonder how many other, like... Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, he was arrested on August 31st, 1985, but he didn't, the jury selection didn't begin until July of 1988.
Wow.
Because they did so many delays and continuances and all that shit. He did everything he could to make sure that they didn't start this thing on time.
Okay.
They basically finally convicted him of 14 homicides and all the other felonies and attacks on September 20th, 1989. It was 4 years after his arrest.
Holy shit.
And during the trial, there was a juror named Phyllis Singletary who didn't show up one day, and she had been shot in her home. And then all the jurors were freaking out that he was having the jurors killed. It was a domestic violence thing, and her, I think, boyfriend murdered her.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, so that was just to add to the freak out.
Totally. Oh, are you? What if you were on that jury?
Oh, could you imagine?
No,
scary enough because they said all the jurors said the stuff that they saw, the evidence that they saw, and the pictures they had to look at. None of them were sleeping.
And I bet the man himself—he's such a creep. Having to sit like, can you imagine? Just like from where you and I are sitting right now, that's a fucking Night Stalker.
And he was doing things. I mean, there's tons of famous pictures. He was doing things like putting his hand up, and he had a pentagram on his hand, which in the 80s. That was the whole satanic panic time where it was like, this guy is Satan. People freaked out about that shit. It was very scary. He also, they found out about a plot that Ramirez had to somehow sneak a gun into the courtroom and kill the prosecutor.
Oh.
So then they put in, he was sentenced to death for 13 murders, 5 attempted murders, 11 sexual assaults, and 14 burglaries. And when they, at the end of the trial, when he was convicted, he said, no big deal. Death always comes with the territory. I'll see you in Disneyland. And when they sentenced him, he said, he grinned when they said, you know, it was like, I think it's something like 14 death sentences. Mm-hmm. He said, his official statement was, you maggots make me sick. Hypocrites, one and all, we're all expendable for a cause, and no one knows that better than those who kill for policy, clandestinely or openly, as do the governments of the world, which kill in the name of God and country and for whatever else they deem appropriate. You don't understand me. You are not expected to. You are not capable of it. I am beyond your experience. I am beyond good and evil.
That's pretty fucking poetic. Like, for someone who's insane and has a head injury and isn't probably educated, that's fucking a pretty powerful.
It's powerful, but it also, being somebody who is in the 12-step program, I would like to mention that addicts have a real sense of grandiosity about right. themselves. And so this is a person who is pretending that because he is a psychotic, uncontrollable murderer, that somehow makes him magical and special.
Yeah.
When in fact, it just makes him an animal.
Yeah.
Because that's really what he was.
I know. And you're right. And I think people probably, it wasn't just him who was thinking of him as grandiose. It was everyone, because it was such a, you know, it was so terrifying. And he was able single-handedly to put this whole city into a panic.
The whole state.
He believed it. And I think probably everyone else did too.
I mean, and he looked the part. Yeah. Everything, it was on the level of Ted Bundy in how he looked evil, but then he was also sexy. There was yeah. a rock star element. So then it kicked up all that stuff of like women being like, I'm in love with him. He actually married a woman while he was in jail, who is not not a rock star, doesn't look like a rock star type of gal herself. It's very fascinating. And she was also a virgin.
Oh,
which
shit.
I kind of am fascinated
by. I feel
by.
Like the fact that he was able to get, it's like the same thing with Ted Bundy, where it's like, how can you be so prolific? How can you kill so many people in such a short time and get away with it? It's almost like you are on another level.
He was on another, I think, another level in that way of you can't track chaos.
Yeah.
And he really was, he wasn't sticking into a neighborhood. He wasn't, there was no, they couldn't get a hold on him because he would just switch the city.
Right.
And he also switched the type, they couldn't follow any of it.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, oh, there's just another body and another body and another body.
In the same way, Ted Bundy, because of his charm, they couldn't figure him out.
Yep.
Maybe those were those two things, that he was switching cities and that this guy was charming, are what were able to make those people get away with so much.
Right. Well, and also I think the people's sense of, oh, who would and wouldn't do things was very different back
yeah.
then. It was very uneducated.
Yeah.
But I'm still reading that Ted Bundy book right mm-hmm. now. Fucking Ann Rule heard the news that the man was named Ted at the those lake murders where the two women disappeared in one day.
Mm-hmm.
That it was a man named Ted, and that he had a gold metallic bug, Volkswagen bug. And she knew that his name was Ted and he had a gold metallic bug. And she told people, but she still didn't think it was him.
She still didn't think it was him.
No. No. She was like, there's no way it could be him. But she did tell a cop that she knew, because she worked with them. And she was like, just so you know, I'll give you this name, but it can't be.
Did they follow up on him?
Like a little bit, but he had then moved to Colorado. I think by the time those two were being like really looked into.
Okay.
So anyway, that's the Night Stalker. Fucking... I'm sure there's so much more online about him because, you know, like.
Yeah, but there's always going to be more. It's
yeah.
amazing.
When it's a classic like him.
Well, happy birthday to his death.
Happy death day, Rich.
Happy death day, you piece of shit.
You total lunatic.
Fucking psychopath. I mean, this story ends on such an incredible note. Again, fucking shout out to Boyle Heights and the people of Boyle Heights. Like
Boyle Heights.
Unbelievable.
Sorry, I got so excited because I just was like, if you watch the Netflix documentary Night Stalker, The Hunt for a Serial Killer, you have to watch it
yeah.
because the people who chased him down are in that documentary.
Yeah.
They get to tell the story themselves, and it is so great. It's so satisfying. The individuals who are on camera, some of them are survivors and mm-hmm. victims, which is incredible, listening to them, and they're seeing that, like, a person being able to tell that story with, like, strength and spirit. And it's an amazing piece of work, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But the people who are like, we saw him and we heard that that's who it was and we knew we had to get him. Like, it's the beauty of like humanity where it's like, you're not allowed to hurt people like this and we're going to do something
right.
about it.
We're not minding our own business. This is, we can't do this and you can't come into our neighborhood. Speaking of neighborhoods, yeah. when I was like rereading some of the details of this, I like looked it up because I was like, uh-oh. And it turns out that Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, and the Hillside Stranglers both attacked people like in my immediate neighborhood. yeah. that I now live in.
Yeah.
So that's, we didn't catch him. It was Boyle Heights.
Oh, yeah. Boyle Heights got him.
Yeah.
Also, I think, though, the way Los Angeles is,
right.
I think in any neighborhood, you could probably say that because yeah. there's been so yes. many insane serial killers down here.
If I was like, I live in this on this block in Duluth and that's and there's two yeah. people, like that would be wild. But L.A., no, that's not.
Yeah,
that's not that.
L.A. is, we've had some bad ones.
Oh, sure. We sure have. It's a great place to go if you're a bad person.
So there's no major updates in this case, obviously, except for that I love to brag that my cousin Martin was a cop who picked up one of the fingerprints that eventually led to his identification in San Francisco. I'm very proud. I'm also very angry that he waited until, like, he said it at Thanksgiving as if it was no big deal 1 year, where I was like, you've had this information yeah. since it happened. That's insane.
Wait, like, make a t-shirt. You should be wearing that t-shirt that says that all the
Come
time.
Come on.
Yeah.
You stopped that guy. You yeah. helped stop him. But anyway, the only update is just watch that Netflix documentary because it's so good and it just gives you all the color and the, you know, the firsthand mm-hmm. accounts that you need to hear. And that cop Gil, I can't remember his last name, but he worked both of those cases, Hillside right. Strangler and the Night Stalker. He's right. in there a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. So now let's listen to George's story about the Bain family murders.
All right, so my favorite murder. All right, this is one that people keep wanting us to do, and I didn't know about it until we started doing this show, which I love finding new ones out.
That is a good feeling.
All right, this is the Bain family murders.
I don't know
this one?
I don't think so.
All right, you guys in New Zealand, I hear everyone from New Zealand cheering right now because they're like, finally.
We have severely underserved Australia, New Zealand, that whole area.
Can I tell you, I met some girls who were from Australia and I was like, well, Australia's better. And they're like, why? And I'm like, you have better serial killers. And they thought, I think they looked at me like I was fucking, like, I don't think that they were on the same level as me.
They're not one of us.
No, because they're like, and they like kind of looked at each other and like, yeah, we got good serial killers. I was like, anyways,
nice to meet
I love
you.
My cats. Okay, so on the morning of June 20th, 1994, that might have been my bat mitzvah day, actually.
Oh, really?
The day I was bat mitzvahed.
What was your main bat mitzvah gift?
Oh, well, the one I remember the most that I loved the most was a Ren and Stimpy poster.
Oh my God. That's so Jewish.
I know. Yeah. Fucking love Ren and Stimpy.
They're pretty great.
Okay, so David Bain, who was 22 at 7 a.m. about, he called 111, which I'm assuming is 911 in here.
I was going to say 999.
Right.
I was going to say, yeah, it's 999. I get it.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I think I'm slowly losing my mind.
I think you are too.
It'll be fun though, because I'll do it on this podcast.
Because last week you asked, why didn't I ask this murder victim if she had sex with her boyfriend?
Yeah, and I was pissed about it too. It's like, this is really bad police work that you wouldn't ask a dead person why. Anyhow.
I love that because it's like, that's such an obvious brain malfunction.
I think I had very low blood sugar. All right, go ahead.
Fair enough. So at 7 a.m., he calls the operator and he says, they're all dead. They're all dead. When the police arrived, they found five members of the Bain family. They had all been shot to death. The father, Robin, who was 58, the wife, Margaret, who was 50, the daughters, Arawa, who was 19, and Lynette, who was 18. I might be saying these two girls' names wrong. I'm sorry.
Lynette sounds right.
Well, it's L-A-N-I-E-T.
Oh, Jesus. Lynette,
and Arawa is A-R-A-W-A.
A-R-A-W-A.
Arawa? Sorry.
Do you mean Arya Stark?
What?
from Game of Thrones?
No.
All right.
And their son, Stephen, who is 14. There was evidence of a violent struggle involving Stephen, who was partially strangled as well as shot. So David's story is that he got up at his usual time. He put on his running shoes, and he was a paper boy at 20. So he went on his regular paper run with the dog. He arrived back around 6:42, entered the front door, went to his room. He went downstairs to the bathroom where he washed his hands, which were black from newsprint. He put his clothes in the washing machine, including the sweatshirt he wore, and then went back upstairs and noticed bullets and the trigger lock on the floor. And he went into his mom's room to find her dead, then visited the other rooms where he heard Lynette gurgling. And then found his father dead in the lounge, and he was devastated and rang emergency. And the defense, who ended up trying this case, proposed that Rob and the father killed the other family members before he switched on the computer and typed a message that said basically that David was the only one who deserved to be here, and then killed himself. But and that's what looked like a murder-suicide, right?
Oh, looked like.
Yeah, looks like a murder-suicide. So David Bain was examined by a doctor on the morning and found to have some recent injuries. He reported that he noticed recent bruising to the right temple and bruising above his eye, and it looked pretty new. And David had no way to explain this. He didn't even try to explain this, like he fell off his bike or anything. So the only suspects were David, the oldest son, and the father. Okay, so they found a lens from the glasses that David had been wearing on the floor of Stephen's room, like kind of underneath him. And there was bloody gloves found in Stephen's room. And why is the father using gloves if he's going to kill himself?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
So 4 days later, David Bain was charged with 5 counts of murder. So what actually happened later, and this is from crime.co.nz, the story is that David wakes up around 5 a.m., gets dressed, and pulls out a .22 rifle. He unlocks the trigger, attaches a silencer, and loads 10-round magazine.
Shit.
Puts on his white gloves, blah, blah, blah. He was wearing his mother's glasses because his are being repaired. He goes into his sister's room
that's so scary. That like just gave me a weird chill.
Which part? That he was wearing his mother's glasses?
He's a 20-year-old guy wearing white gloves with a rifle with a silencer and women's glasses.
Yeah.
There's something very creepy about that.
Totally. Well.
What year was it?
It was 94.
So they're probably those ones where
large.
The big, very big round.
They're serial killer glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. He goes into his sister Lynette's room where he shoots her twice in the head as she's sleeping. Goes into his mother's room, shoots her in the forehead. In the room off his mother's room, he finds Stephen asleep. He puts the rifle to Stephen's head, but Stephen wakes up and pushes it away as it goes off. There's a struggle with Stephen, bleeding from the scalp wound as he fights for his life. David twists Stephen's t-shirt to strangle him as he lies on the floor. David finishes him off with a bullet to the head. And then during the struggle, his glasses fell off. He picks up his glasses and brings them back into his room and puts them on his desk. But there's still a lens in the other room, right? So he goes downstairs where his sister, Arawa, has heard the shots, and she's praying for help. Honey,
oh, no.
Why didn't you run?
Phone for help.
Yeah.
Don't pray for help.
He shoots her. He shoots at her, and he can't see anything because he's not wearing his glasses. Shoots at her again, finally gets her. Then he goes back upstairs where he hears Lynette gurgling, and he shoots her again in the top of the head. And this is a really good, because I'm just going to get to this. He gets convicted of murdering his family. A few years later, the conviction is overturned. He's now out.
What?
He wasn't proven guilty. He's not proven innocent. He was proven not guilty because of reasonable doubt.
Why?
And the reason that people don't think he's innocent is that he tried to get money for his time that he was locked up. And the only way you can get money is if you're proven innocent. And he wasn't. So he shoots her and kills her. He hears the other sister gurgling. But remember account of what happened, he said that he heard his sister gurgling when he got home from the newspaper delivery.
Right.
So if he heard her and she was already alive, still alive, gurgling, then how did she die? Because she got a second shot and that killed her. The first shot didn't.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still there when the second shot happened.
While she's dying and the second shot happened.
Ooh.
He
didn't track that correctly.
No, he did not.
He should have put that down on a piece of paper.
He did.
He should have worked it out on scratch paper.
Totally. And then burn the scratch paper.
then rinse the ashes down the sink.
All of it. He did not think this through. So he throws his bloody clothing in the washing machine, turns it on.
Just burn it.
Yeah. What? And they found the father's blood on the washing machine, like a handprint of this kid's flood. He turns on the computer and he types the suicide message from his father. And what the suicide message was, sorry, you're the only one who deserved to stay.
Wow.
Then he hides behind the curtain with the rifle and waits for his father to come in to pray, which is a daily routine. David shoots him in the head and then calls 911. Yeah. Okay, here's the fucking craziest part to me. 2 weeks after the murder, after the police have completed their inquiries and handed the house back over to the family trustees, the house was burnt to the ground.
Whoa.
On purpose.
What?
By the Bain family and the New Zealand Fire Service. And part of the reason that he got off and wasn't put in jail the second time was because the fucking cops, and it's like a known thing, I'm not just blaming cops, bungled this so fucking hard. They didn't test the dad's hand for any gun residue, gunpowder, just shit like that, that they just didn't do correctly. They didn't. So
what it was New Zealand, right?
Yeah.
So they did, probably hadn't had like a whole family murdered before.
I think it was a rural area where they lived too. Yeah. So what they say is that the reason that there was doubt and thoughts that the father had done it and had done a murder-suicide was that the daughter, Lynette, had returned home. The reason she came home from college that week was to confront her parents with her that her father had been molesting her and that they'd had an incestual relationship over several years. So he killed his family because of that. That's what the offering was, right?
But sorry, who was making that? Who was saying that?
Well, there are people, including both of their friends, because they were close in age, that said that they heard that. But when they were called to trial, that says something about how they seemed confused about it. So it was never like proven.
But that also could have been like the defense attorney,
right,
making it seem like they didn't know what they were talking about.
It seemed like it came from a couple places, but I don't think it was ever proven, which is another thing that I went on our My Favorite Murder email and kind of just looked up Bain to see if anyone had emailed us about them. And actually a lot of people have. Someone named Alexander, he told me, here, I'm going to read his email. Okay. The thing is, here in New Zealand, people on both sides of the camp are so passionate and sure about who they think killed everyone, Robin or David. I've listened to intelligent people argue through their teeth for the completely different sides. And during David's recital, I remember getting our history teacher in high school to spend the whole lesson explaining why David was innocent. I've heard more heated arguments about David Bain than I have about religion or politics.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because people knew him. So, like, these are people that knew either the dad or the son?
No. These are people, I think everyone in New Zealand has an opinion.
Okay, based on
these random facts. All of this, as well as a clear amount of sexual and physical abuse happening within the Bain family, which I looked up and I didn't find a lot of that clear evidence.
Right.
Combined with rumors of cops planting evidence on the scene to frame David, or the fact that if Robin had killed himself, he'd have come to have pulled the shotgun trigger with his toe because the gun was really big, made for a pretty fucking intense story. David Bain became kind of a meme in New Zealand because on TV and all the shots of him getting escorted by the cops, etc., he's always wearing really ugly sweaters. And this I saw a lot. People are calling them Cosby sweaters and shit. So basically, there's a part in the middle of the call. Okay, this is really interesting. So basically, in the 911 call, he says they're dead, they're all dead. And basically, there's a part in the middle of the call where David more or less gasps or mumbles or murmurs. It's a second long, and you wouldn't think it was anything more than just him being out of breath. But the prosecutor argued that David actually whispers something here. You can actually do tests online where you can listen to the gasp, whisper, and write what you think might be saying, if he's saying anything at all. What the prosecutors are claiming he said was that David quietly whispers to himself, I shot the prick. So here's a theory that I had never heard before until I read this email, that Robin killed his entire family. David came home and found that and killed Robin because of that.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So kind of everybody's guilty.
Yeah. So this guy says, did David discover Robin had killed everyone? And in a fit of revenge, he shot his prick of a father himself.
No, because that doesn't prove. That doesn't explain why the sunglass lens or the glasses lens is underneath.
Yeah,
the thing.
Yeah, he said that he left the glasses in there, like the week prior, something like that. He had an excuse for that.
They were under the bed or under the brother.
I think they were. I looked at crime scene photos and they were like a mist. They were like underneath some clothing and stuff. Okay. So it wasn't necessarily his body. Yeah. And whoa. Then let's see.
I will say this. Just if this was just like I had to decide right this second.
Okay.
First of all, 20-year-old newspaper delivery boy, red flag.
Totally. Lived at home still.
What the fuck are you doing? Secondly, when you come home from a newspaper route, and maybe he was riding a bike all over hills and dales, I don't know. But you would work it out, like, I get washing your hands, because you have black shit all over your hands, but going down to the washing machine and stripping down and washing all your clothes.
And turning the washing machine on immediately doesn't make any sense.
Nope, it sure doesn't.
Also, I read another thing that was saying that in his explanation of what happened to the cops, he said he saw his mother and his sister, like two people. But on the 911 call, he says they're dead. They're all dead.
Oh, so he was trying to make it seem like...
No, how did he know they were all dead if in his... It's another one of his... He fucked up by saying that they're all dead and he had only seen two of the bodies.
Oh.
So how did he know they were all dead?
Oh.
Yeah. And then I kind of interpreted the dad's... if the dad had done it, I kind of interpreted his computer message saying, you're the only one who deserves to still be here. As like, maybe he's killing them thinking that he's doing them a favor and he thinks his son is a piece of shit and he's like, you're the only one who still deserves to be on this shitty planet.
Oh, like he means it in the negative.
Yeah, not like you're the only good enough person to not get killed. Maybe you're the only one who's not good.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's, but doesn't it seem very like classic narcissist where you would write a fake letter talking about how great you were?
That's, yeah. To me, it's too much.
Yes. That the dad would be like, I'm going to murder everybody. We've all been in this house together doing God knows what terrible shit.
Yeah.
I pick you as my favorite. Everybody else is going down.
Well, to me, it's too much. It's too stupid that the son would write that. Like, he should have written some... I think he would have known to write something more.
Yeah, but he was a 20-year-old paper boy.
Yeah, but it sounds like he planned this whole murder out. Because he also did a thing where he made sure his whole family... He, like, called a family meeting the night before. Just kind of... It seems like what people are explaining that as is that he was trying to make sure everyone was in the house that night and the next day.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think there's any way he didn't do it.
Yeah, also because... Sorry, did you say any of the accusations about incest or molestation were proven?
No, they couldn't be proven, but it's brought up a lot. There's a couple people who can corroborate it, but they never did
in
a trial. Yeah. So who knows how reliable those are.
But also, that's like, it's the perfect thing. It's the perfect, like, ingredient to add into this for confusion.
Totally. But I don't think he said it. So it doesn't make any, you know, it's not like he's
the
one. Oh,
that wasn't his story.
It wasn't his story.
Whoa.
He was also never like, my dad is an asshole. I can't believe he killed my whole family, which you think he would be saying.
Yeah.
Or I can't believe my dad did this. I would never think my dad was capable of this or anything along those lines. He never did
that.
Or
to use that to justify why he killed his dad. His
right.
dad killed the family, but he killed the dad.
Right. No, there's, yeah, because you think that
He would be painting himself as a hero.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds. Yeah. So I can't believe there's a huge argument about whether or not this kid did it.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You know how they'll find out?
How?
If he kills somebody else. Now that he's free.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he won't. Maybe he was 20 and fucking.
Just trying.
Pissed.
It was like he was going through a reggae phase, except for murder.
Maybe he was really into hacky sack for a short period of time, and then
he grew some white dreads, went nuts.
Except for murder.
Now I'm ready to be an accountant.
He seems like a celebrity too, like a local celebrity.
Well, because I mean, what's better to talk about than something that has everything? Murder, incest.
It's real ugly.
You can't gloves.
Cosby's,
ladies' glasses.
Cosby sweaters.
Cosby sweaters.
I mean, and I can attest to this. I saw some photos.
This is, to me, staircase level.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
This is very staircasey. Oh, speaking of, I went to a party over the weekend. Remember Erin Dewey Lennox?
Who
had her, we talked about how she had her prom photo on the staircase.
Yes.
Because she was friends with that family.
Yes.
She set me straight over the weekend. She said, in that episode, you said that I believed the owl theory. And she's like, and I fucking don't.
Oh.
I was like, I'm so sorry.
I love it.
Yeah. So she doesn't.
I thought she was going to be like, and I have the blow poke. Here it is.
Sorry.
No. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes me feel better because the owl theory is absolute fucking insanity and is not real.
And she is friends with a sister who is like alienated herself from the rest of the family who believes he didn't do it. I hope I'm not. I hope she's okay with me.
You just said every single name she has.
I know. She's a very funny comedian and everyone should go to her shows.
So, and also, she probably would have told you, if she was mad about the owl theory, she would have told you she was mad about the name thing.
Maybe I'll text her after this and be like, we cool?
Let's call this episode, it's going to be edited so much that it's going to be 11 minutes long.
Yeah, totally. It's now, if you're not listening to an episode that's at least an hour and 20 minutes, you're listening to the wrong, you're listening to a very edited.
You're listening to, a reject episode.
Yeah. I also met a girl who... Okay, I'm just going to make this short.
Yeah.
Her stalking photos, were found at the BTK crime scene.
Her
name is Taryn Southern. She's a fucking YouTube star. She's a sweet angel, awesome person. And she was like, casually, we were like chatting and the murder podcast got mentioned and she's like, oh, I have a story. It's not that big of a deal. And she's like, she went to the church where he was a security guard.
And he had pictures of her?
Yeah. She was like 16 and they had to call her at college and they were like, are you still alive?
Oh,
I know.
Oh my God.
And I was like, how is this? You just won my life.
You might as well have just said to me, like, I met fucking Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Did she lose her shit?
I don't know if she lost her shit. She's like, I never spoke to him. He wasn't like a creep. He chaperoned the prom.
Oh, no.
So there were photos of her, like, from prom.
Oh, but so she was, like, one of his favorites?
Like, not favorite enough, thank God.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
No.
Wait, when they told her she was in college, so she was, like, 16 when the pictures were taken, but then, like, 18 or older.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's crazy. Wait, has he been put to death yet, or is he on death row?
I don't think he's been put to death, has he?
I don't think so.
We'll edit it out if he has. So if you're listening to this,
guys, this
he's
is
not dead.
One of the more professional podcasts that you are going to hear on iTunes.
You're welcome.
I mean, look, we want to be professional for you.
Yeah.
It's what we're all about.
This is who we are. It's what we do.
I'm proud that this episode I didn't say the word like 900 times.
Oh. You know what I want to stop doing? That I noticed halfway through, and you'll notice that my voice isn't doing it. I have vocal fry a lot.
Yes.
Where, like, I talk like this, where I, like, you know, I'll be telling a story. And
oh, I was doing
that
the whole time last episode.
Why do I do that?
Well, we lay down a lot.
That's true.
We are... Georgia is often just flat on her back
for the
entire episode.
If I didn't have to sit up to look at my computer, usually I print my notes so I can, like, hold them over my face.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get up.
I've read a couple of the negative, of course I have to read those, but, it's just things like that of like, it's two Valley girls making jokes about murders or whatever, where I'm like, I get that. I hear that.
We are
on the first pass
from California and we make fun of murder, but that's not all it is.
And we have kind of Valley girl speech impediments.
We've lived in LA for a very long time,
but we're also not afraid to lecture you on how bad we think rape is.
Right.
We might really have to edit the top of that off.
All together?
Should we just start over right now?
Hey, thanks for listening. I'm George and that's Karen. Hey, Karen, how was your week?
Oh my God, what a great week. Fun.
Positive.
Super positive.
Yeah.
I like everything.
It's a good thing everything has been solved.
Things are great and nothing's bad.
Yay.
Boo.
Let's end this two ways.
Yes.
Because people have been asking for this one.
Yeah, missed that.
Okay.
So we're going to end it by saying, guys, stay sexy.
Don't get murdered. Also, Elvis, do you want a cookie?
Oh, what else?
Thanks for listening, you guys. What?
And Elvis?
Cookie? And can we get the final statement?
Cookie? In stereo.
listening. Rate, review, subscribe.
Bye.
Bye.
Whew. Wow.
Yeah.
Are there updates for this story?
A little bit. This is one of those cases that I think still come on those lists of like the biggest mystery, what actually happened. It's kind of become this like folklore almost in New Zealand, but you know, it's been 30 years since the Bain family murders. As I stated in the episode, David Bain was convicted of the 5 murders of his family members. However, after proving a number of errors in his trial, David's convictions were overturned and he was released after serving almost 13 years in prison.
Oh, wow.
And a clarification, since it wasn't totally clear in the episode, David was ordered a retrial, which happened in 2009, but a second jury ended up acquitting him on all 5 murder charges. So it's been overturned. He's been released and acquitted. So it kind of, someone had to know what they were doing and like know what was going on, and that you'd think he maybe actually didn't do it.
Well, and if that's the case, and he's wrongfully imprisoned and his whole family is dead.
Oy vey. And
I mean, that's what a nightmare and how horrible.
Yeah, totally.
This is like an episode where I feel like every fucking thing I'm saying sounds the tritest thing I've ever said in my life.
I mean, that's all you can say.
Yeah.
So now he's in his 50s and he lives with his wife and children under a new name.
Wow.
And so to end this episode is the first time we end with both SSDGM and Elvis saying goodbye.
That's right.
Monumental.
It took us 20 episodes to kind of work out the kinks. Yeah. We're starting to get this thing on its feet.
Yeah, get a tagline.
We're starting to tell full stories. We're starting to do all our homework.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so 2020, as everyone knows who loves the show 2020, it's a perfect title.
Sure.
But there could be other ones. Georgia said Child's Art Project, which is her describing the cross stitch that she started for me.
Oh, yeah.
She was giving me. What, did you just not give it to me?
I think it's still in here somewhere, like halfway done. I definitely didn't finish it.
Well, thanks.
I got really into cross stitching. Turns out when you cross stitch, you can be really good at cross stitching or you can have cats, but you can't have both. So yeah. I learned that lesson, you know.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And then the other title could be Swimming Above All, which Karen talks about doing a somersault off the side of a pool, hitting your head, and then going back to swimming afterwards, because swimming above all. I like that one.
I truly have never hurt my head that badly. Oof. And then I was just like, just power through it. It doesn't matter.
A head injury.
Just keep going. Keep going.
That's yeah. And that's what we have done for the past 8.5 years.
That's right.
This has been like a head injury.
keep going. Keep going. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. You know, be here every Wednesday with us while we kind of muck through our old episodes, our old victories and mistakes. Mm-hmm. They contain multitudes.
This is like a bog, and we're like digging out the bog bodies.
Yeah, there's bodies, but then there's also a beautiful golden chalice.
Treasures in the bog. Treasures.
Okay, stay sexy.
And don't get murdered.
Goodbye.
Elvis, do you want a cookie?